In America, you have a right to be stupid.
I mean, I do think at a certain point you've made enough money.
$100 billion, $1 trillion.
Come on!
If you got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Listen to reason.
We're lending money we don't have to kids who will never be able to pay it back, to train them for jobs that don't exist anymore.
My faith has really allowed me to overcome a lot of things and hard work. You know, nothing comes easy.
We're so focused on getting into the corner office, we forgot how to build a corner office.
There's a clear cause and effect here that is as neat and predictable as a law of physics. As government expands, liberty contracts.
Finding real answers to form real solutions for a better America. KLZ 560 presents Rush to Reason. Here's your host, John Rush.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Hour number two is upon us. Don't have a guest now until 4:30 if you want to call in and talk about the debate last night. Did you watch it? What did you think? Who won? Who lost? Does it matter? 303-477-5600. So I've got notes. I was typing away feverishly last night as the debate was going on. And collect my thoughts here. Make sure I say this correctly. I'm not criticizing, by the way. I'm just giving. I'm going to give you my observations. I love Donald Trump. He's my guy. He is my pit bull. I hired him to do just what he does. On the same token, somebody should have put a leash on Donald Trump, pulled him back ever so slightly, and not having been so aggressive at times to Joe Biden. And what I mean by that is you could have probably not said as much as he did. Let Joe Biden dig his own hole, which he did, because he would just blubber around when you allowed him to speak. And I think at the end of the day, you would have actually had more fodder for you and your own campaign by letting Joe just speak. Now, with all that being said, I have a recap of some of the things that Joe said, which, by the way, are not correct. For example, one of the first things he said was, people should get input on the Supreme Court. No, they shouldn't, outside of who they elect as president and who controls the Senate. That's their input. Outside of that, nobody gets any input on who that pick is, who that nominee is, and whether they get confirmed or not. It's not their job. They hired a president. They hired a senator. And if they hire enough senators in a majority of a party, those senators get to make that decision. Not you as an individual citizen. So no, Joe Biden, you are wrong. Joe also focused on health care and not the SCOTUS. That was one of the first questions, which I thought was really ironic. Instead of answering the question on the Supreme Court pick, he shifted, pivoted, and went to health care instead. I would not have done it that way, but I'm not Joe Biden. Jeff, you're up first today. What's going on, sir?
Hey, John, first off, I just wanted to wish you a happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I knew there was one reason that I liked you even a little bit more. Today's my birthday.
Well, happy birthday, Jeff.
Well,
awesome.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I couldn't watch the whole debate last night. I watched about the first 40 minutes of it. And I'm with you. I think that Trump should have just destroyed him. I was a little disappointed that he wasn't a little more reserved in the way he went about it. I think if he would have been a little bit more on a leash, he could have really picked him apart.
I agree. And Jeff, here's what I think happened along those lines. I believe that when Joe Biden, and I believe this was on purpose, and I believe his handlers told him to do this, when Joe Biden told Donald Trump basically that he wasn't very smart, that he was a dummy, basically, man, that set Trump off, and he was on a roll from that point forward. And what Donald should have just said was something along the lines of, well, you know, Joe, and he did finally say it, but at that moment in time, I would have said, well, you know what? I've accomplished more in 47 months than you did in 47 years. How am I so dumb? That's all he would have
had
to say.
Yep, and just left it at that.
Exactly. Instead, you know, he kind of went through the old, you know, and he is Donald Trump, and I get that. Now, I would venture to guess that if and when there's a next debate, he will probably have enough handlers around him telling him the same things you and I are talking about right now that I doubt if he'll be as aggressive in the next one.
Yeah, I think you're right. But like you guys were talking about earlier in the week or last week, I don't think there's going to be another one. somebody in the Biden campaign is going to test positive this week, and they're all going to be quarantined.
Well, it could be too, Jeff, because they're claiming they're going to move forward with them, but I'm with you. I'm not sold on that yet.
No, I'll believe it when I see it.
Me too. Jeff, I appreciate it. Happy birthday too, sir. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
You betcha, sir. Take care. We'll go to Kevin next. Kevin, welcome. How are you today?
Good. Yeah, I agree with everything you kind of opened up with. I think what the way I took it after I thought about it, because I was upset that he was interrupting Biden so much, and you could tell if he'd have just let Biden go that he would have hung himself. But I think it's 4 years of just sitting there in the back burner, simmering. These people are the people that tried to impeach him, tried to just everything's been against him from those people for 4 years. And, you know, he's only human. He just let it out last night.
He
came loaded for bear.
He did, Kevin. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with him feeling that way. And I mentioned this in the National Crawford Roundtable as well. And this is the one thing that we all as armchair quarterbacks can sit here and criticize. We're not the one on stage. We're not the one with the light shining at us. You know, we're not the one running the country and doing all of that. And the only thing I will say, and this is where, you know, again, and I'm not Donald Trump. He's a much smarter man than I am. Although I think I know how to present things fairly well because of what we do here each and every day. Despite all of that, Kevin, you walk out on stage, you don a huge smile, which, by the way, he did not have the entire night, and he should have had. You speak directly to the camera, to the people of the United States of America during the debate itself, and you do your very best to let that stuff just roll off your back, get the zingers in as you can, and win the debate overall. That's what you do.
Yeah, I think Melania told him that afterwards because she kind of had to hold his hand and hold him down because he was still ready to go back in the ring.
Yeah, and you know, and I think in his world, and by the way, this is okay. I hired him to do this. I mean, in his world, it is much like a grudge match, like a fight. You know, he feels like he's going in there and he's fighting for the American public. And in a way, he is, Kevin. But I think he has to remember that there is somewhat, and it's debatable now as to how many people haven't decided who they're going to vote for anyways, because my own gut thought process, Kevin, is I think most people have already made up their mind anyways. I don't think there's much in the middle that are trying to decide one way or the other. But if there is a few of those people that haven't made up their mind, those are the people that you're actually presenting to. Let's face it, you and I, we're on board, we're voting, that's not going to change. We're in the Trump camp, period. And the folks that are on the Biden side, same thing is true for them. The question is, how many actual true middle of the road voters are there, and how do you garner those to your side?
Well, I'd like to know how many of those voters, one positive thing that came out of this last night was that Telemundo survey.
Oh, big one.
And 66% thought he won the debate. That's where the machismo makes big.
I agree with you. And you know, and there's a lot of things that I feel like, and I wrote some of these down. I think, you know, Trump did do a lot of things correctly last night. Again, I just wish, and I'm not saying a lot, Kevin. I don't think there's anything wrong with him, you know, going after the Democrats and going after that party and going after, you know, even Joe Biden. And even Joe says, I'm the face of the Democrat Party. Well, Trump got a couple of zingers in right after that, because basically what Trump said is, well, if you're the face of the Democrat Party, they're leaving you because what you believe in, they don't, and you got problems. And you know what? That was the right thing for Trump to say. But I think you could have let, again, to my point earlier, had you just let Biden talk more, he would have done more of that.
Oh, he would have crashed and burned several times. I was getting frustrated watching him stop him, and then if he didn't stop him, Mike Wallace, Chris Wallace,
I think that was the other frustration for Trump, and he even said it at one point, is, you know, who am I debating, Chris, you or this guy over here? Because it seems like I'm one against two. But again, what Trump's going to have to realize is every debate that he enters, it's going to be that way. So you might as well figure out how to handle the moderator, because they're going to get worse from here on out, not better.
Right. So, anyway, good discussion.
Stuff.
And I hope there are more debates. I lost a bet for a Mexican dinner and margaritas last night because I never thought he'd set a foot on stage.
I didn't think he would either, Kevin.
I hope there is
so.
Another one because I mean,
I do too, because I think Trump could redeem himself with maybe some of those vote. And again, I don't know how many there are, but if there are voters in the middle, I think he could redeem himself on a second round if he focuses on the right things. The problem being, this is something else to think about as conservatives, they're always going to throw questions at him that don't even allow him to answer things correctly. But that's where Trump has got to be smarter and do exactly what the Democrats do. Joe did it last night. When asked about SCOTUS, he went to health care. Trump's got to do the same thing when that time comes.
Yeah, and I'm not worried about Trump at all. I'm just want another opportunity for Biden to crash
him. I agree. Well said, Kevin. Appreciate that. Well said.
Okay,
good stuff.
Thanks
for calling. I appreciate it. Lines are open, by the way. Got another segment left before our next guest. 303-477-5600. What did you think about the debate last night? Who won? Who lost? How did Joe do? How did Trump do? Mighty Hand Construction, though, is up next, folks. And no matter what you need done around the house, windows, siding, roof, in fact, a free roof inspection, they've got it all covered, and they would love to help you out around the house. Get those things done before winter hits. Find them at klzradio.com.
As a full-service construction company, Mighty Hand has the experience to assess all of your exterior damage. Your insurance company will rarely offer you the full amount on your claim the first time, partially because your adjuster may not realize the extent of the damage. Micah and his team have dealt with plenty of insurance claims that covered the roof, but failed to factor in the damage to windows, deck, siding, paint, and trim. Since the Mighty Hand team professionally installs and sells windows, they've seen how poorly fitted windows can cause damage to siding as water works its way down. Although they won't try to fix damage that isn't there, they will take care of your entire exterior so you don't get stuck with another project and another bill. Contact Micah and his team today for an estimate on your full exterior redo in Northern Colorado. Ask about their retrofit windows for increased energy efficiency. Visit klzradio.com/mightyhand. Honoring God, impacting customers.
All right, folks, and to pay for those things I just mentioned at Mighty Hand, Kurt Rogers at Affordable Interest Mortgage can help you, and he would love to, folks. That's what he does. He'll make it work for you, and it's an easy phone call, 720-895-0500, 720-895-0500.
Rates are like a roller coaster lately. Are you concerned about the future and how to protect your home? Do you want to become mortgage safe? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage. With home values still at their highest level ever and rates at historic lows, now may be the best time to be prepared if the economy changes. Last time, many of our friends lost their home when it was unnecessary. Take AIM, 720-895-0500. Many of our clients have the ability to tap their equity should the economy change, all without having to borrow the money now. We can show you how to access your equity in these uncertain times to give you peace of mind and allow you to focus on what's important, your family. Call Affordable Interest Mortgage at 720-895-0500. That's 720-895-0500. We are locally owned and operated since 2001. Our reputation of putting you first with straight answers and listening are unmatched in Colorado. Let us help you protect your home. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where it's all about you.
Putting reason into your afternoon drive. This is John Rush.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Thanks for tuning in. Bobby in Lakewood, thank you also for the nice phone call you had a moment ago, and he agrees with what we're saying. And, you know, folks, again, I am no political pundit expert. I just sat there as a radio talk show host. And, you know, I follow the stuff on a daily basis, watch what Trump did, watch what Biden did. There was a lot of great things that Trump did. And I, you know what? I'll criticize where it's due. There's a lot of things he didn't do very well. And again, we'll recap those. Number one, somebody needs to train Donald Trump. You always, always, always walk out on stage with a smile. I got the feeling that he was irritated in even being there. And yes, as a conservative, I would be as well. But it is what it is. It's the format that we have. He agreed to the debate. When you agree to the debate, you walk out, you smile. I know there's no handshaking, but you get where I'm coming from there. You still make the best of it, whether you like it or not. And I could tell from the very get-go, he did not want to be on that stage. He, in his mind, and I can tell you this right now, felt like that was a complete waste of time. He was loaded for bear. He was going to unload on Joe because he's tired of everything going on. And I get that. The problem is the suburban mom or the independent voter that you still need on your side may not look at it the same way that I do. And I mean that sincerely. And if Donald Trump was sitting here, I would say it to his face. I'm not his handler. I'm not his advisor. But that would be my advice to him, is you've got to walk out on stage. You've got to be happy. You've got to smile. You've got to thank the American people for letting you be there the last 3+ years. And then you know what? Yep, lay into Joe Biden anytime you can. But again, you've got to let the other side talk, because in this particular situation, he's going to talk himself into a hole anyways. Now, some of the things that Trump did say that I think was spot on. When Joe was saying that the American people need to make sure they've got a voice in the SCOTUS nomination, Trump came back and said, "No, Joe, I'm elected for 4 years, not 3 years. We control the Senate. You didn't control the Senate when you guys had this in 2016. That's the difference in the situations. And the reality is, I'm not a president for 3 years. I'm a president for 4 years. This is coming up under my watch. I have the ability to nominate and then to confirm, and this is how it's going to work." And you know what? Perfect answer on his part. The other thing that I felt like he did very well is when he told Chris Wallace, "I guess I'm debating you now also." Not an exact quote, but that's essentially what he said was, "Yeah, Chris, I think I'm debating you along with this guy over here next to me." He did get questioned on the mask thing, which, by the way, I thought was a pretty crappy shot from Chris Wallace on the mask thing. You know, all of us out here, for the most part, I know there's a few libs out there that love masks, but for the most part, everybody in the country is stinking sick and tired of wearing a mask. And my feeling is that one should have just been dropped off the platform altogether. John and Cheyenne, you're next.
Yeah, I was just wondering if I'm the only one that thinks that it wasn't a debate. It was more of the Chris Wallace question show.
Yes, agree.
A debate, usually you ask one question, have both candidates answer that topic. That's the way we were talking.
Yeah, well, and the other thing too about that, John, and you bring up a great point, is in a lot of ways there were times where Wallace was not necessarily feeding Joe the questions, but he was definitely feeding him the answers, which is a bunch of crap.
Yeah, and then when it really made me mad when Wallace was going after Trump for taxes, and it denounced a white deal, but he didn't go after Joe Biden on his China investments or Ukraine deal.
Correct.
And I was like, this was the Chris Wallace question show. This wasn't a debate at all.
No, and the reality is, how in the world we ended up with Chris Wallace as the quote-unquote conservative, a narrator. That's crap. Chris Wallace is no more Republican than Hillary Clinton is.
Yeah, but I would like to ask you and your listeners what they thought about the questions to Trump versus the questions to Joe Biden. That really perturbed me last night.
Oh, it did me too, John. In fact, as I mentioned that just a moment ago, some of the things that got slung at, the mask thing, for example. Now, that was a dumb question. Didn't need to come out at all. It was stupid. Everybody out there is tired of wearing masks except for the true hardcore liberals that are out there. Yeah, there's a few knucklehead conservatives that care about them as well. But the average person, John, is sick of wearing them.
And one last thing. I really would have loved them to ask Joe Biden about three things: the China, the Ukraine, and the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
None of that was
done. Well said. Well said. John, good stuff. Thank you. Appreciate the phone call very much. Say that again, Charlie. Yeah, Joe, thank you for reminding me. Charlie reminded me that even in Joe's ads, he's wearing a mask. Of course, Joe, Joe feels like there needs to be a mask mandate coast to coast. And keep in mind, there has been no proof whatsoever. In fact, some of the highest reigning healthcare officials in Europe have even come out and said, and a lot of folks have given them flack for saying so in Europe, but they basically have come out and said, folks, there is no solid data that these things help one way or the other. It's a big feel-good measure. That's it. I know Donald Trump can't say that. But again, there are a few things that Trump did that I would have handled differently. One of the biggest mistakes I feel like Donald Trump made last night was when asked about veterans, and Joe mentioned his son that died of brain cancer. President Trump should have said, "Joe, yep, you know what? I'm sorry about your son. He was a great veteran. Our hearts, go out to anybody like him, including you as a family member. And yes, we really appreciate what your son did for our country. Now, let me talk about your other knucklehead son who's taken millions and millions of dollars from foreign countries. Let's talk about him for a moment. So you acknowledge the son that died, that was a veteran, But then, yes, it's fair game to go after Hunter Biden and the things that he's done. And that was one of the mistakes that I feel like, you know, again, it's armchair quarterbacking. I get it. But even when that was going on, I was saying to myself, here's your chance. It's getting lobbed up to you. Take advantage of it. And that was one of the ones that he missed. On the same token, let me tell you some things that I believe Joe Biden did wrong. Saying he doesn't believe in the Green New Deal when, in fact, he does. Talking about us rejoining the Paris Climate Accord and at the same time talking about the Green New Deal and the fact that he's not in favor of it. Joe talked out of both sides of his mouth many, many, many times last night. He also said, which I think was a big mistake, he is the Democrat Party. Joe, I would have never said that. That would be like me saying, I am the Republican Party. I mean, even Donald Trump, in all of his egotisticalness, didn't get up and say, I'm the Republican Party. For Joe to get up and say that, I think is extremely, extremely bold on his part. The other thing I think that Trump made a mistake on that I would have explained in a different manner is the mail-in ballots. And the way I would have explained it is, listen, Chris Wallace, here's the deal. We've got X amount of states that have done mail-in voting for quite some time. They had a lot of bugs in the beginning. Colorado, you know, I'm here, so I would have said, you know, Colorado being an example of that. Yes, they've had mail-in voting since 2013. So have several other states. Every one of them went through their growing pains in figuring out how to make that really work, how to make it effective, and how to make it honest. We're now going to rely on every other state, whatever, 43 other states, because I think there's seven states that do mail-in voting. Is it seven or five, Charlie? I don't remember. Regardless, let's say it's five. So there's 45 states now that are going to have to try to play catch-up and do it exactly the way these other states have done it for the past 7 years. Chris, what do you think the chances of these other states, these 45 other states and every single county in those states getting it done correctly the first time around in a big presidential election? The chances of that happening, I believe, will be slim to none in getting that done correctly. That's how I would have answered the question of mail-in voter fraud and the things that are going on. I would not have used the examples that he did last night. The other thing that I would have really hammered Biden on more so than what he even did, and granted, he did hammer him pretty well, Biden saying, this is one of the biggest gaffes of the night, I think Biden said, oh, Antifa's just an idea, not to suburban moms that are worried about Antifa showing up in their neighborhood. It's not just an idea. Not the people that have been in the inner cities that have had their businesses burned to the ground. Not the people that have had their cars, you know, burned to the ground and their businesses looted. You know, Antifa and BLM is not just an idea. It is a real thing going on. It is a real movement and people behind that movement. And no, Joe, it's not just an idea. And that's what I would have said had I been Donald Trump. Again, several things that I would have done a little differently. All in all, I think Trump did a fairly decent job. I think he could have rounded that out and done a little bit better when it was all said and done. But hey, let's take a quick timeout. We'll come back. We're going to talk to, again, Ramsey Dennison. He is the director of Money Machine. It's a documentary about the Vegas mass shooting cover-up. We'll talk about that here in just one moment. Pure for Chevrolet is coming up next, folks. If you want to buy a newer used car in the market for a new used car. In fact, maybe the car you've got's just not working right. You want to do something different. Your lifestyle has changed. They can help you. Again, new or used, it's purefoychevrolet.com. Find new roads. Again, purefoychevrolet.com.
My first name is Steve, and I began going to Purefoy in 1993. And even though I live 45 minutes away, I've never gone to another dealership. And I bought five cars from them over the years, all Corvettes. My overall impression has always been the same, and that is that they're a small-town dealership. They're a dealership in a small town, but they're really as professional and courteous and as concerned with their customer satisfaction as any dealership or any business I've ever been to before. Just about everybody that you run into there just makes you feel like family. And why would you not want to deal with somebody like that? We've all been to places where you walk in the door and you realize that whoever it is you're talking to really doesn't care. You're just somebody they want to get out before 5 o'clock so they can go home. And in this day and age of technology and, you know, all the stuff that we've got going on that says you've got to get people out the door to make money, that's just a breath of fresh, it's a hurricane of fresh air to go up and deal with Raleigh and his staff. They're just wonderful, wonderful people.
Hi, I'm Rolly Purefoy. We're just up the road in Fort Lupton and on the web at purefoychevrolet.com. Find new roads.
Enchanted Kitchens, folks. Make that place in your home the enchanted kitchen that you'd like it to be. In other words, make it work properly. Make it the magic of design. Yes, that's what Enchanted Kitchens will do for you. Find them at klzradio.com. Again, klzradio.com.
The number one goal of the Enchanted Kitchens design team is to create a space that fits your daily life. Yes, you want a kitchen that looks nicer and more modern. But for you, the primary value of a redesign is the difference it will make in your everyday life. You need a functional, open space so you can have a pleasant day-to-day experience in your kitchen. Above all, you want a kitchen that works. At Enchanted Kitchens, you will partner with a professional team of designers who know how to ask the right questions to help you plan out the kitchen you and your family really need. As a Rush to Reason listener, after you've visited their experience center, the Enchanted Kitchens team will schedule a follow-up meeting in your home for free to assess your space and learn specifics, like how often do you entertain and for how many. In order to get the functional kitchen of your dreams, you need the Enchanted Kitchens design team on your side. Visit klzradio.com/kitchens, where magic meets design.
Now is the time to zero in on your target audience. So many businesses spread themselves too thin by trying to reach an enormous pool of customers. John Rush can help you define your niche, trimming the fat so you can maximize your profits. Not just surviving the shutdowns, but actually beating out your competition with smarter business strategies. You've done a good job staying afloat. Now it's time to hone in on your most profitable customers. Reach John now at RushToReason.com.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Denison Ramsey joining us now. Denison, welcome to Rush to Reason. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
We really appreciate you joining us. So talk about, you've got a new movie coming out, Money Machine. Talk about it, if you would.
Well, Money Machine is about the 1 October Vegas mass shooting, which is the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history and also one of the most quickly forgotten. And so my documentary Money Machine, which is available on iTunes tomorrow, October 1st, the three-year anniversary of the Vegas mass shooting, kind of exposes why the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history became one of the most quickly forgotten.
Okay, so you know what?
How money played a role.
And thank you, by the way, because even myself, it was only 3 years ago. Why does it seem like it was way farther back than that?
I think it's because it disappeared so quickly. You know, it was like the biggest story in the country for like 3 days, and then all of a sudden, just nothing. And so, Money Machine exposes how this shooting and the victims had to be pushed aside so that the registers could get ringing again in Vegas.
So your feeling is they pushed that aside as quickly as possible just so they could get basically gamblers back in Vegas.
Correct. And while doing that, a lot of the lip service they paid to safety and the kind of PR stuff that they said but didn't really mean, the end result is that Vegas isn't any safer now than it was before this happened. And they've only kind of pretended that it was, and they really have not addressed the underlying issues.
Okay, so what did they actually do, mentally, physically, to basically cover this up or move this thing along faster, Denison?
Well, in the wake of the shooting, one of the things that they did is they just cut off all, after the kind of celebratory thing, police, one thing that people don't realize is that this happened in an election year. So the Sheriff Joe Lombardo was up for election. And so after they got done kind of, patting themselves on the back about what a great job they did, even though 58 people died and it took the LVMPD 70 minutes to even get into Stephen Paddock's room. And he didn't stop the shooter. He actually killed himself. So after they kind of like took their celebratory bows, which weren't really justified whatsoever, then they kind of cut off the press's access to the questions. So meaning they shut down the press conferences and cut off everybody's access to the story.
Gotcha.
And that's one of the main reasons why the story went away so fast. And the other thing they did is a lot of the public information surrounding that event, those calls from the night of October 1st, the videos, the things that are public information, they refused to allow access to those. And so you actually had a couple large media organizations like the LA Times and Associated Press and several others like pooling together to sue the LVMPD to release that public information. And so that whole legal maneuvering kind of created a situation where, you know, it took a long time before the public could get their hands on those documents. And therefore, every day that was passing, it just kind of receded farther and farther into the background to the point where it is now.
Yeah, I know. I also know back in that time, because I was on air then and we talked about some of these things. And I know there was also a lot of speculation back then as to, was there more than one shooter? You know, the way that a lot of the, you know, a lot of the bullets were flying and where they came from, it was, you know, it was speculated that there was more people in the room than just the one, that there's no way that many shots of, you know, could have been fired by just one individual. Am I on the right track? Did some of that stuff get covered up as well?
Well, I'll tell you, we actually took a rigorous approach, a technical approach to trying to answer those questions, because what we, you know, when we started the movie, we thought a lot of those things were valid. We thought there could have been multiple shooters, because when you interviewed a lot of the people there that night, they would tell you that, you know, the people at Route 91 concert, they would tell you that they thought there was multiple shooters.
Gotcha.
And one of the reasons for that was just the pandemonium and chaos,
right?
People running into
right.
casinos covered in blood. But the other major factor was, you know, Vegas itself with the large buildings and the glass and the reverb. And the other thing that was going on that night is when this happened, the PA system, which is rather massive, by the way, was on. So when that gunfire was happening, it was, you know, echoing out of the microphone and reverberating, and things were bouncing off. Okay, so there was a lot of people, and they'll tell you, the people were running away from the gunfire, that they never felt they could get away from it. They felt like no matter how far they ran, it was right behind them. And so we actually, you know, when I started the project, I thought there might be something to the multiple shooters, but it's, you know, but then we started getting scientists on board, and we actually went out to Montana and interviewed a gentleman named Dr. Rob Maher, who's written books on audio forensics, who's often called into, courts to kind of testify about, you know, and give his expert analysis, having written several books. He analyzed the waveforms from that night and concluded that they were coming from one.
Gotcha.
From one source.
Yep, that makes sense. And again, I brought it up just because it was, you know, it really is a conspiracy. I don't know that, you know, to your point, it was never proven. In fact, you've probably proven otherwise that, yeah, there only was the one shooter. And here's the other thing I also know, Dennis, and you probably figured this out as well, that when those sorts of things happen, you can interview five different people on the exact same event going on and get five different answers as to what exactly is happening.
Absolutely. Especially when something this unexpected happens. And you know, you talk to the people there that night, they'll tell you that the Route 91 concert was a massive success before that. It was a great event. People enjoyed themselves, and it was kind of the last night of the festival. Everybody kind of let down their guard a bit, and then all of a sudden, they're just plunged into hell. You know?
Did you ever figure out, Dennison, what the actual root cause of the shooter actually, and I always hate to use people's names because I don't want to give the guy any glory, but, you know, the actual, you know, shooter's name, you know, we all know, but did you ever figure out what the actual motive to doing this was?
Yeah, and I'm going to say his name. His name is Stephen Paddock. And I just want to say part of that whole thing of, like, not naming the shooter is to kind of, like, help it disappear fast. And I understand that. But even monsters have motives, and it doesn't mean that that there's anything justifiable or reasonable about those motives, but there's a reason this happened. And when we really got to why it happened was when we actually interviewed Stephen Paddock's brother, Eric Paddock. And Stephen and Eric had made a lot of money in real estate together. They were very close. They knew each other well. And, you know, when we sat down and interviewed Eric, he told us that his brother was mad at the casinos. He felt that he'd kind of been screwed over by them, that they hadn't played a fair game with him. And that's really when the focus of Money Machine shifted.
Gotcha.
Was when we talked to his brother.
Now he felt like they weren't fair in some of the real estate things they had going on, or just fair in the way they handled the gaming side of it?
It was really the gaming side of it.
Okay.
Not a lot of people know that before he came to Vegas, Stephen was in Reno. And, he's a rather skilled gambler.
Okay.
And he initially in Reno, he was getting all the comps and being treated like a king. And then eventually they started kind of cutting up when they saw how good he was at this. They started cutting off his comps and doing little things to discourage him. And that's kind of why he ended up leaving Reno and came to Vegas. And over the course of time, kind of the same thing happened.
Gotcha.
When you start actually pulling money out of a casino.
Yeah, they don't like that. They don't like winners, do they?
Yeah.
Now, Vegas, just as a side note, Vegas wasn't
really
built on winners, was it?
Bargain, you know? So it was kind of deceptive. If you believe what his brother told you, and also what some of the former Mandalay Bay employees that I interviewed told you, is that, these high rollers don't like the games that the casinos play when they start.
Gotcha.
It's almost like a one-way deal. Once you start taking money out of the place,
they don't want you anymore.
And they play dirty games to do that. Like for example, the example Eric gave was, it would be like 3x points at midnight. Steven was always looking for an edge. I'm going to gamble when there's 3 points. So he'd go in there at midnight and they'd be like, well, everybody else gets 3x points, but not you. It was things like this. Even though it's absurd that somebody would kill 58 people and open, you can't really jump into the mind of a madman.
True.
And even though it doesn't make sense to you or me, reasonable people, it clearly made sense to him. There was something driving him to do it.
Yeah, most definitely. Okay, another question I had for you was, which to me, again, I just find it appalling. And I guess, in a way, if you do it correctly, you can haul all those guns and ammunition up to the room. You can put them in golf bags, do things along those lines. But at some point, doesn't somebody get suspicious about the crap you're hauling into your room?
Good question. One of the things we discovered was that, there were over 200 surveillance cameras out that night of October 1st.
They were out? Gone? They were not working?
They were not operational.
Oh, geez.
Meaning they were up, but they weren't working. And remember, Mandalay Bay is massive.
It's huge. It's like a city.
Well over 1,000 cameras, but many of them weren't operational. And then the other thing, of course, is that, having filmed a lot in Vegas, the truth is security is very lax. I'm often in the position of having to haul up film gear, which kind of looks similar to the like tripods and things like this.
Right.
It can very easily be weapons. And nobody ever stops to check anything. And that's still the case to this day. The fact of the matter is you could haul up a bunch of weapons up there today and kind of do the same thing.
Yeah. And I understand, you can hide them in, luggage, golf bags, things like that. I get that. But and to the point of what you're saying, when you're a high roller and you're rolling in and out of there, most people kind of know what you look like, and you almost become so familiar they don't recognize you or pay attention to you. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I don't think anybody remembers. Stephen Paddock was a rather unique murderer. Okay, nobody had ever seen somebody with this kind of wealth and this profile do this.
True.
So that was kind of very unusual. And also, he'd been at Mandalay Bay for a long time, over a decade. He'd been kind of going in and out of there. And so, I think a lot, nobody really expected this to happen. But at the same time, there were clearly security failed that night. And MGM has, done a pretty good job of covering that up.
Gotcha. So, question for you. Has anything changed since then? In other words, Vegas, New York City, any other place along those lines, has security tightened up in those areas, or is it pretty much business as usual?
Well, I can tell you one thing. One of our producers on the film, Mike Turber, he actually walked into that lift elevator over, a couple dozen times, the same one that Stephen Paddock used to transport his weapons. And, because after this happened, MGM, Mandalay Bay, made a big show of like, oh, we've tightened security and all this stuff. And after they said that, he walked in and rode up that lift elevator up and down and up and down without any security ever asking him a question.
The reason I asked that is that I've been in, you know, different types of, you know, hotels or places or whatever. And there's times where it's like, you know, there's not a soul around here. Yeah, there's some cameras up there, but if nobody's paying attention to that camera, you darn near do whatever you want to do.
Well, I want to tell you something that, you know, not a lot of people know. You know, there are not cameras in the hallways.
No,
in a lot of casinos and hotels in Vegas. And there's a very good reason for that. Vegas will never acknowledge this, but you know, Vegas is, a lot of the economy is built on the fact that this is where people go to, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. This is where people go to do bad things. This is where people go to snort coke and hang out with hookers and do all kinds of unsavory things. Okay, so if you have cameras in those hallways and say, like, a prostitute comes up there and gets in a big fight and the high roller, like, beats her up and all this stuff, you have a certain vicarious liability by the fact that, you know, all of a sudden the hotel is part of that lawsuit,
right,
because of the cameras in the hallway. Okay, so where, and not only that, but, you know, these high rollers come there because they don't want to be exposed for having fun and doing all this stuff. And so as soon as there's cameras, then all of a sudden it, you know, there's just all these things where it could end up showing up in the.
So I'm assuming, from what you're saying, Ramsey Dennison with us. He is producer of Money Machine, which is a new movie, new documentary out about the mass shooting and the cover-up that was involved with that. So Ramsey, question for you. Has any of that changed? I assume there's still no cameras in the hallways?
That's correct. You know, there's very few hotels in Vegas where there are cameras in the hallways. And, you know, there really should be, because that's, you know, it's really sad that all these people had to die and all these people had to have permanent injuries and that nothing's really being done to get at the root problem.
Okay, so talk about the movie. Where can people see it, watch it, all that good stuff?
Well, Money Machine is available on iTunes, and then it's coming to the other platforms pretty soon as well.
Okay.
But our initial rollout is on iTunes.
And tomorrow?
Yes, on October 1st, which is the 3-year anniversary of the Vegas mass shooting.
I will be sure to watch it, Ramsey. I'm looking forward to it, actually, especially after talking to you. I can't wait to see it. So, and by the way, you're welcome back anytime. You want to promote it again, let me know. We'll get you back on. This has been fascinating. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. Ramsey Dennison, again, the movie is Money Machine. You can, as he just said, Ramsey, thanks. You can watch that on iTunes and it'll come to other platforms here in the not too distant future. I would encourage you to watch that, folks. Bruce Simmons is next. He is our reverse mortgage specialist. Love to help you out with all of your reverse mortgage needs. If you're over the age of 62 and you've thought about a reverse mortgage, get the right story from Bruce. You can do that by calling 303-467-7821 or just go to klzradio.com.
Between the high home values and low interest rates of today's market, you want to call Bruce Simmons now about refinancing your reverse mortgage. Your home value has increased since you first took out your loan. By refinancing at today's low interest rates, you could pull more money out of your house without increasing your loan balance. Convert an even larger portion of the value of your home into tax-free money that you may use however you wish. Plus, as long as you continue to pay your taxes and insurance, you will never need to worry about making a mortgage payment as long as you live in the home. KLZ's reverse mortgage professor, Bruce Simmons, makes a potentially confusing loan program easy to understand. Right now, Bruce can even walk you through the numbers virtually, line by line, from your home computer. Visit klzradio.com/reverse and ask Bruce to run the numbers for you. Find out how much you could benefit from refinancing your reverse mortgage.
Save the Children. Let's save a child's life around the world. And again, you can do that by going to SaveChildrenKLZ.org or dial 1-800-570-5155.
Hi, this is Scott Wilder. You've heard us talk about the COVID-19 emergency relief work that Save the Children is doing in this country. You know, Save the Children works in 125 countries around the world, but also works right here at home, especially in times of crisis and disaster. And COVID-19 certainly qualifies as that. Your $100 gift, we've told you, can provide breakfast, lunch, and dinner for one child for 10 days. $300 can do that for one child for a month, and $1,000 can do that for one child all the way through the end of this semester. 30 million U.S. school children count on school for more than education, count on school for also their nutrition. Save the Children is standing in the gap and inviting you to do the same. Would you join us? Call 800-570-5155, 800-570-5155, or go to SaveChildrenKLZ.org.
Rush to Reason, Joe joining me now. Joe, welcome. What's up, sir?
John, I just want to, everything your guest said is true, but I want to just talk about the fixation that the public, particularly liberals, have on how many guns were used, the type of guns, where the guns were allowed into, and they try to control the actions of madmen by controlling the type of weapon or how many weapons. Yeah, and I want to point out that that was probably one of the least effective ways if you want to kill a lot of people. Now, let me give you first a reference point. Nice, France in 2016, Bastille Day. A guy drove a 20-ton box truck down an open street. There was a beach on one side, divided middle. He killed 86 people in 60 seconds.
Right.
And there was no fence. They were free to dive out of the way. He killed 86 people in 60 seconds. Now, in the case of the Mandalay Bay, you had 15,000 people packed shoulder to shoulder inside a 6-foot-high security fence. If he had gone down the street and rented a U-Haul truck and drove it into that crowd of 10,000 people at 60 miles an hour, do you think he would have killed more or less than 50?
Oh, far more.
Far more. So the point
yeah, no, to your point, so many other ways that if he really was methodical in what he wanted to get done and the damage, yeah, there's many, many, many ways he could have done that differently.
He was a pilot. He could have rented a plane and flown it into the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, and let me, so people talk about mass shooting. Do you know in the last 50 years what the largest mass, not counting Oklahoma City, which was 168 dead, do you know what the other largest mass murder in this country was in the past 50 years?
In Twin Towers.
I shouldn't meant besides the Twin Towers.
Besides the Twin Towers.
But domestically.
I don't know. I can't answer that.
Happy Land Social Club, Bronx, New York. A guy got thrown out of an after-hours nightclub, got pissed off, went down the street, bought a little gas can, $2 worth of gas, came back, set fire to the staircase. He killed 87 people with $2 worth of gasoline.
Yeah.
Now, I'll take you one more. Aurora Theater shooting.
Yeah.
It was a sold-out theater packed at midnight. What if James Holmes, and by the way, he killed 12 with his guns. What if before opening that side door, he chained all the other side exits
shut? Oh, I know.
Shut,
I know.
And threw a couple of Molotov cocktails into the theater.
No, he'd have killed more people.
He'd have killed way more than 12. So we get this fixation on the weapon. Oh, we got to control the weapon. We got to control
We got to control the people, is what we need to start doing. Getting people's minds and hearts right, Joe.
Right, because I call it, if you're trying to control the weapon, it's like squeezing a balloon. It's just going to pop out
somewhere else. Yeah, they'll find something else to use is what they'll do.
Yeah, and if they had prevented, oh, you got guns in your luggage, you can't bring those up to your hotel room, fine, okay, leave them in my car.
I'll figure something else out.
I'll go get a U-Haul truck and I'll kill 200 people.
That's right. So, well, you know, look what happened in Oklahoma City, same situation.
Diesel fuel and fertilizer, which, by the way, you can still buy both of those.
Yep.
You can't buy them in bulk. You have to make 4 or 5 different trips. You got to buy 50
or have a commercial license. You can buy as much as you want then.
Have a commercial license, or you can buy 50 pounds at Home Depot, another 50 pounds at Lowe's.
You can go all around town and get as much as you need that way, sure.
Get as much as you need. But the point is, we get fixated, and particularly liberals get fixated on the tool. It's not the tool, and you'll never prevent a mass murderer from killing people.
Nope.
By focusing on the tool.
No, and unfortunately, Joe, you know, we've gotten so far away from our core as a country, you know, the Christian roots that we've got, and getting away from that core over the years, pushing, you know, godless society throughout our school system and so on, and then we wonder why we have madmen running around wanting to shoot people.
Right, and by the way, when I was in the 60s, when I was in high school, we had a rifle team, many in New Jersey. 2 days a week, I would walk 6 blocks to school from my house with my rifle in a case over my shoulder. I'd wave to the cops as we go by. My teammates and I would put our rifles in our school lockers at 8 o'clock in the morning. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we'd take our rifles out of our lockers and walk across the street to a church, which happened to have a shooting range in the basement, if you can believe that. And we'd have rifle practice. So here are kids, 12 kids bringing rifles to school 2 days a week. What's changed?
People have changed.
People have changed.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly,
I think
right.
Church. Most of the kids I went to school with went to church on Sunday.
Yep.
By the way, if you grew up in a rural area, my grandparents had a cattle ranch upstate New York, every single 15-year-old kid on our rural road, if you said, hey, you want to go shoot woodchucks after dinner, every single 15-year-old kid in that street had access to a loaded rifle.
And would show up and do whatever they needed to in a safe manner.
Right, but you'd also see them. But you'd also see every one of them in church on Sunday.
That's exactly right.
A two-parent home.
Well said. Well said. Good stuff. Joe, I appreciate it. Good stuff. No, you were spot on. Hit the nail on the head. Speaking of guns, though, if you want to buy a gun, exercise your Second Amendment right. Frankdown Firearms is a place to do so, and you can get trained on that at the same time. And, folks, we do believe, and if you're going to own a gun, make sure you're trained on how to use it. 720-770-7777 or find them at klzradio.com.
Instead of transporting your firearms to and from the range, you can store them safely on-site at the Franktown Firearms Armory. After purchasing a firearm, the team at Franktown recommends that you shoot consistently with your own gun on the range, as well as signing up for one of their proprietary training courses or one-on-one instruction so you can develop confidence handling your gun. You can also store your firearms temporarily while you're on vacation or protect your heirloom weapons without taking up space in your gun safe at home. The team at Franktown prides themselves on developing long-term relationships with their clients. They see beginners turn into experts all the time. First-time buyers come in looking for guidance and come back because they're having fun. Learn to shoot with confidence in a family atmosphere. Store your firearms at Franktown. Fill out the contact form at klzradio.com/Franktown for pricing. Franktown Firearms, where friends are made.
All right, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Again, that last movie called Money Machine. It's on iTunes tomorrow. And, yeah, I would suggest you watch it. Now, you may not believe everything that's inside of that, but the one question I had, which I got answered, which there was a lot of conspiracy around that back then, was to, you know, how many actual shooters were there. And sounds to me like they go through that in the movie through some actual experts on, you know, sound and the reverb of it and so on. So anyways, that'll be interesting to actually watch. Coming up next here at the top of the hour, we've got Dr. Stephen Hotze, H-O-T-Z-E, joining us. He is the CEO of Liberty Center for God and Country in Houston, Texas. And he's going to talk about the Lone Star Ballot Harvest and that it has begun. So kind of going along with what Donald Trump said last night, we're going to learn about some of that in the Lone Star State next. So don't go anywhere. Hour number three is next. This is Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560.